Hello and welcome back to another episode of Insights from Sight Loss Friendly Church with Matthew Horsfall and Lynn Davis. And coming up this time, how can I help a person with sight loss to lead music in my church?
Yes, because we are both musicians. I mean, we are certainly both singers in our respective churches. And we are doing that and have been doing that for a while, or rather successfully. And I also know a lot of other blind people who are musicians in their church. So some will be singers, some are playing different instruments. So we know that it is very possible. But how do we actually include everybody in music and being a musician? How do we make it possible to get the best out of people with sight loss who wants to be musicians in their church?
Yeah, so I think the first thing to recognize is that there are different levels of music in different churches, and people with sight loss are not necessarily going to be at the lowest level. I've certainly had it in the past where I'm very musical, and I've gone into a church and they've said, oh, wouldn't it be wonderful if you could be part of the music team? And then I realized that actually they realize that I'm musical, but they're bringing me in as an act of charity, not because they think that I can actually do, you know, that I can actually do it. So yes, all right, I can play at that level, I can sing at that level, but I can also sing at a professional level. And, you know, depending on the nature of the music, you know, I'm also capable of leading, I'm capable of choosing songs. So I think don't sell people with sight loss short. They do really have capabilities in this area sometimes.
Absolutely. I have never been brought in as an act of charity myself, because by the time they have approached me in churches I've been to in the past and in my present church, they have already established that I have the musical level that I do. So for example, in my previous church, you couldn't be a musician or a singer unless you had undergone a very rigorous audition process. So I had to do that as much as everybody else had to do that. And there was actually another time I didn't pass an audition, and I'm a professional singer, because they wanted a particular type of singer and I didn't fit the bill. So that wasn't to be for me. So I think it's really important, like you said, to think about what their musical capabilities. So I think what you're saying is really important. Bear in mind that they might have really high musical capabilities, and any process you have for intake of musicians in your church should also be applied to the person with sight loss.
Yeah, and I think that latter point is particularly true, actually. You were talking about how you didn't pass an audition, not because you weren't a good singer, but because you weren't the type of singer that they wanted. And that is absolutely appropriate, because all that would happen, you know, you might think, oh, well, yeah, but I mean, she's blind or he's blind. Well, maybe, and a good singer. I mean, we don't want to, you know, ruin his confidence, so better let him in anyway. And that's a, you know, it's a nice thought. But the problem is that if it doesn't fit with what the rest of the group is doing, then the person with sight loss just ends up sticking out like a sore thumb. And there may be resentment from the other musicians. There may be a sense of discomfort in the rest of the congregation. And then that doesn't, you know, that doesn't work. It's not good for the person with sight loss. It's not good for the church. And actually for the community as a whole, it then makes people with sight loss come across in a not terribly good way. And so actually it's better if the person's not a good fit, just to tell them they're not a good fit.
Oh, exactly. I really was disappointed that I wasn't a good fit. But at the same time, like you said, I would have rather been rejected than accepted and just stuck out like a sore thumb. So having acquired musicians with sight loss in your church, what are some things that is important to keep in mind to get the best out of them?
Well, planning, as far as I'm concerned, is probably the most important thing you can do. The further ahead you can tell me what the music is going to be, the further ahead I can start to plan. And if it's simple music, then I don't need to worry about it. If it's slightly more complicated music, but I can learn it by ear, then I can go off and I can start to learn it by ear. if it's really complicated music and I need it in Braille, you know, I need the words in Braille or I need the music in Braille, I can go ahead and start to get that commissioned. But I think in all contexts, it's important to remember that blind people, like any other type of person, will have commitments on their time. And it may, if it's a new piece of music, may take them longer to learn that piece of music than the sighted people, because they can't just look down at chord sheets or word sheets or music sheets or whatever it happens to be. And so to turn around to a blind person with 2 days' notice and say, can you learn this song? Actually, most of the time they may be able to do it because they're, you know, gifted musicians. But if they've got a busy couple of days at work, it's not because, you know, it's not because they can't learn music quickly. It's because on that particular week, they don't have time to sit down and learn it. So, you know, give it to them 2 weeks in advance and they may have been able to learn it within that time frame.
And this is also where the style of music that you practice in your church really makes a difference. If you are more of an evangelical church where the praise and worship is very free flowing, you might have planned a few songs, but you sort of see where the Holy Spirit takes you, then by all means, it's good to be able to jam and sort of improvise. And also, it depends on the personality. So I have a couple of friends who are musicians in churches and they're amazing at improvising. They love it and they love a challenge. But there are other people who are not that way inclined. They need to prepare quite a lot, especially as well if you have like a blind organist, for example, which is completely possible. It is very, very important, not just for the sake of the blind person, but for the sake of the church, that this organist plays as well as possible. And they really need to know their stuff, because you don't really want to have an organist that just stumbles over the chords. That's fine. It can happen to anyone, whether you're sighted, whether you're blind, but you don't want it to constantly happen and to be a thing that happens in every song or in every hymn. Preparation is key. And also, it is very important to have lyrics as soon as possible for singers. I find that I might not be always able to memorize something because I don't have the time. Like you said, I have commitments at work, I have a family. There's a lot of things that takes up my time and I can't always be memorizing words. But if I have the lyrics written down, I can use Braille, refreshable Braille or hard copy Braille to read the lyrics. And that really makes a huge difference to whether I feel like I am a good part of the worship team to when I don't feel that way. So, for example, my church now, we are getting a lot better at it because I've been basically telling them that they need to do it. Otherwise, I won't be able to sing. And they really want me on the worship team, so they make sure that it is done. So whoever leads the worship, make sure to have the lyrics in a few days beforehand, or they will tell me which song numbers it is and I can find them and I can sort of make up my own lyric sheets or whatever.
Yeah, I think the other thing for me that really sticks out as something, not so much for a singer, because as a singer you're in a team and you can sort of, you know, feed off other people, but if you're leading, you know, and I have done, you talked about blind organists, I'm not a brilliant organist, but I can play and have played at things like funerals and weddings and things. And then it's a question of knowing exactly what's going to happen and when, and how to respond when things don't happen as they should. So for example, quite often you'll need to, you'll have a hymn that covers a procession. So the offertory hymn while the collection plate's being taken around the church, or the communion hymn while people are receiving communion. And the idea is that there will be music until the procession reaches the front or until all people have received communion. And in that situation, devising signals, and it doesn't really matter what that signal is. It could be someone coming over and tapping you on the shoulder. It could be, I know certain organ consoles have got a light rigged up to them. You could swap that out for a doorbell or a buzzer or something. So they press a button when they're at the front of the church. I suppose it could be a text message on a mobile phone. It could be a walkie-talkie, like whatever it is. But have a signal so that when you're leading, you know when everybody's received communion, when the procession's reached the front, so that you know that you don't have to improvise anymore.
Yeah, that's right. And also, in the sense of like when you lead worship, which is slightly different, so I'm talking more about the evangelical form of worship as well. As a worship leader, because I have done that a few times, you have the luxury of deciding what's going to happen when. But it's the same thing, like if something doesn't happen or maybe one of the musicians find out that they want to improvise something and you don't know that, like how do you communicate that? So what will happen in my church is that the keyboard player, she will tell me the sentence as she's playing it, which means that I know that she would like us to go another round and sing that chorus another time. So there are so many ways to do it.
And actually in modern worship, that tends to happen quite a lot anyway, doesn't it? The worship leader would say into the microphone, one more chorus or you know, the sentence that starts the chorus or the sentence that starts the verse, or, you know, that happens quite a lot. And that does make it very easy for anybody, whether they're on the worship team or in the congregation, to follow.
Yeah, and I certainly do that when I lead. I'm very vocal about when I want to do another chorus or when I want to do a verse one more time or part of a chorus just to finish off. That's super helpful and something that doesn't sound like you are helping. It sounds like part of worship, and it is part of the worship, really. It just has the added benefit of actually helping people out. But there is one more thing when we're talking about people with sight loss and their musical abilities. Don't assume that every person with sight loss does have musical abilities. So if somebody is new to a church and they have sight loss, do not ask them to join the music team or whether they want to join the music team before you have established whether that is actually an interest. Because I have heard of blind people who have been assumed to be very musical and who can't distinguish a C from a D.
That's very true. And there might be blind people who are very musical who don't want to join the worship team for whatever reason. So yes, it's important to ask them, you know, what is it that you want to do? And it's important to, if you are going to ask them to join the worship team, you know, or the musician team or the choir or whatever, ask them on merit. Don't just ask them because they're blind. And be prepared to listen to what they have to say. You may have a person with sight loss who is not especially musical, but who does know about sound engineering equipment and microphones. And so, although they're not musical in that sense, they may be able to help by sitting at the sound mixer at the back of church and making sure that there's no feedback coming through the microphones. So that's another area where people with sight loss really can make a difference.
Absolutely.
And on that note, that's where we bring this episode of Insights to a close. Thank you very much for listening. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can call us on 01858 438 260. You can email SLFC, that stands for Sight Loss Friendly Church, at torchtrust.org. Or you can visit our website at torchtrust.org. And we really would love to hear from you if you've got any comments about this podcast or suggestions of questions that we could ask in future episodes. For now, though, from myself, Matthew Horsepool, and Lynn Davis, thanks for listening and bye for now.